Hope you're liking our brand new podcast, Office Horror Stories. I'd like you to become our Employee of the Month. I'll even hook you up with a $100 Visa gift card for being the Office Horror Stories Employee of the Month. Huh? That beats any parking spot or having your name on a crappy little plaque down a hall that nobody walks through, huh? For your chance to win the $100 Visa gift card and title of Employee of the Month, all you have to do is give us a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Then, shoot me an email with a screenshot. It's that easy. You're entered to win the $100 Visa gift card and title of Employee of the Month. So, go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes, leave your review of Office Horror Stories, then email that to me. Send it to Tony at OfficeHorrorStories.com, T-O-N-Y, at OfficeHorrorStories.com, and you're entered. Once a month, we'll pick a brand new Employee of the Month, give them a $100 Visa gift card, and you, by leaving that review, help spread the word that this show exists. As many employers like to say, it's a win-win, huh? Leave that review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Send me the proof, and you are entered. Go ahead, go get it done right now. Thank you for the support, and we'll let you know. Professional kitchens can be some of the most stressful and politically incorrect places to work. What do you do when you have a chef from hell who has zero respect for anyone but himself and makes life a living hell for everyone?
Welcome to the world of crazy workplaces, Office Horror Stories.
Have a crazy workplace story to share? Call in toll free.
1-833-HATE-JOB.
1-833-HATE-JOB.
Or write in at OfficeHorrorStories.com. This is Office Horror Stories.
Yeah, 833-HATE-JOB is our phone number to share your office horror story with us anonymously or on our website. Write it in, OfficeHorrorStories.com. We don't need your name, don't need any of that. Just share the story. Let it all out, and we may use it on a future episode of Office Horror Stories. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you once again.
I'm looking forward to this because I spent a lot of time working in restaurants.
Yeah?
Back in the day, I sure did.
Yeah, those are interesting places. The amount of shit that can go down in a restaurant. Can be kind of crazy. It's kind of makes you uncomfortable ever wanting to go eat at one after knowing what goes on behind the scenes. And I don't
know. But also, I mean, I've worked in some really well-run restaurants.
Sure.
Like I never, well, I'm just the type of person, if I saw them messing with somebody's food or if I felt like the food wasn't prepped correctly or stored correctly, mm-hmm. like I just wouldn't work at a place like that. Like yeah. I can go wait tables any damn place. But yeah, that description of the chef, I think I worked with that guy before.
It's a lot of chefs, lots and lots of them. It's funny, for a while there, when I was about 22, 23, I'd already been working in radio since I was 14. So I already had almost 10 years of radio under me. And I was like, I'm thinking I might want to do something else. What else do I like doing? I like cooking. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go to culinary school. So I did that for a little bit, and I actually have never worked in a commercial restaurant, but I guess, you know, it was somewhat close, though the chefs will argue, like, not at all, but it was close enough for me to realize there's no way in hell I wanted to work in a professional restaurant, because most of my classmates did, and all it was horror stories. It was like radio with knives and burners.
It's like, and pissed off customers,
horrible hours, pissed off customers. You can't ever make anybody happy. It's like, fuck, I'm trying to get to a new world, something better, something different than this. This all holidays, you got to work all that. Same with radio. It's like, okay, fuck it. I'll take these cooking skills and use them for something else. So I ended up doing that online and doing a cooking show. But it was kind of an eye opener of, I don't think that's the world I want to jump into. But I always have been fascinated.
If there's one show, it's like Master Chef or one of those. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's Master Chef, where they have these home chefs. And then there's always an episode where Gordon Ramsay throws him in to do restaurant type of cooking. I'm like, what the hell? Like, these people are cooking at home. Like, that's not the same skill set.
No, and they know that. It just makes for a great train wreck on television.
And it is a train wreck. And every time they do that, I feel really bad for those people.
I love Gordon Ramsay's
shows. What's an expediter? I don't know.
I love Gordon Ramsay shows. I love his attitude and just kind of getting at people. Kitchen Nightmares is still one of my favorite shows, and I know they don't do it anymore, but what is it now, like 24 Hours to Hell and Back? Or so. There's like various versions of it now, but the old school one, that was just, I would look forward to that, and I still watch them on reruns. I don't know. I just like watching people get yelled at for some reason. Very sick
he
part of me.
He came here and redid a restaurant.
And they closed down like 3 or 4 months after.
Yeah. And so it was a restaurant you could take your dogs to. So yeah. I meet my friend there one night and Buddy's going with us. And so I wait a while and it's a Friday night and I'm thinking, man, maybe I should call for reservations. And I didn't. And we get there and there's like nobody there. They might have had 3 or 4 tables. So we look at the menu, and I'm like, I've watched enough damn Gordon Ramsay shows. This is the menu? Like, that really surprises me that Gordon Ramsay would come up with this. She goes, no, we switched his menu.
Of course they did.
Oh, this is going to be bad. And it was bad. It was bad.
It's like a
I'm not saying the name or anything like that.
They're gone. But it's like when a good friend comes and asks you for advice, and then you give the advice. And it's like something you're very well versed in, so they should probably listen to you. And then they do the exact opposite. I have friends like that. And it makes you want to hit your head against a wall. Because it's like, why did you ask me? Why did I have this half hour or hour long heart-to-heart, in-depth conversation explaining everything from step A to step Z on how to get where you're asking me how to get to? And then 2 weeks later, you explained to me what you did and you decided to go back to the dumbass idea that you originally had and you wanted a better idea. And it didn't work out. When Gordon Ramsay shows up at your restaurant, gives you the advice on what to do, shows you how to do it, takes your hand and then you completely say, I think I got a better idea over here. No, you don't. People's egos are just fucking crazy of what they think that they can do better than others. It's like, take a step back, yield to the expertise of the expert in the industry. You see that so often, especially the medical practice, absolutely fucking crazy with that. And I always say to a doctor when I'm in there, because I'll Google shit and I shouldn't do that. And I always, if I do ask a question based on something I Googled, I will always preface it going, I am, number one, going to yield to your advice because you are the expert. I am not. But I do have...
But WebMD says... Yeah,
but I have a question based on the little bit of research I did in my own naive position I'm coming from over here. And I just like to get this answered just for my own peace of mind. I'm not telling you what you need to do or what I should be doing. But this is what my understanding is from a layman over here. And I'll ask it. And they very much appreciate it when you come from that standpoint, not the, well, WebMD says it's this, and I'm pretty sure, you know, and they're like, no, that's really not true. Well, you know, they get that all the fucking time. And it's got to drive them up a fucking wall because those guys, you know, they go to school forever. And then it takes forever to build up the practice and to get to the position that they're at. And then you got Joe Yokel coming in going, well, I Googled, and they still don't get fucking believed. I would go fucking crazy in that position. I don't know how they do
although
it.
I've had doctors, I'm like, really?
I've had some too. You gotta kind of
WebMD could help me more than you're helping me right now.
I've had some of that too, I think. But then if that's the doctor, though, that's where you gotta go, I need a different doctor. If you
exactly,
you know, but when you have a good one, don't do that to the good ones, you know. It's just kind of...
Bad thing is you got to figure out first if it's a good one.
Yeah, which sucks.
I'm kind of down on the medical field right now.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, that's one of those... I have to find a new doctor here now, too, because it's like... I finally found a good one I was happy with when we were in Branson. First time in a long time. And it's like, oh, we moved. Like, square one. Where do we go? So, we'll see what happens. 833-HATE-JOB, 833-HATE-JOB is our number to share your office horror story with us. Let's get our first letter. It says, hey guys, I used to work at a medical clinic for just over 14 years. I can't believe I lasted there that long. I did various office type jobs there. Medical records, front desk, scheduling, nurses, aide, mailroom, medical and office supply, inventory, ordering and telephone operator, just to name a few. I remember we had one doctor there who was very book smart, but had a very bad bedside manner, as they call it, meaning he lacked social skills. When I first started working there, I'd pass him in the hallway and say, good morning, only be totally ignored by him, as if I didn't exist. I only did this a few times to him until I finally gave up. It was one time in the nurse's station, which was a very small, cramped area with a few computers for the nurses to do their charting in for calling patients with test results, and I went in there to tell his nurse something. I was in there grabbing some paperwork that needed to be faxed, and before he left, he fared badly. It was one of those silent but deadly, or he farted badly, one of those silent but deadly farts where it smelled like something had died and crapped itself in the process. We knew exactly who'd done it because he was a repeat offender. I later learned that not only had he done this before to nurses, but he'd also leave exam rooms with patients inside with his farts. There were other times when we'd go out for lunch and come back 2 hours later when he was due back in the office for patient appointments in an hour. He was also caught napping in his office on multiple occasions. When he was finally let go, I thought all of our troubles with him had gone. But I was wrong. A month after he left, I was working on the operator phone, and his wife called looking for him, just as she occasionally used to when he worked there. I had to be the one to tell her that he no longer worked there, and he was let go a month ago. I was very mad, not at her, but at him. How could he not inform his wife of such a big event as losing his job and income? Why would he risk it, knowing that his wife might call for him at the clinic? Did he want us to tell her for him? I guess he just couldn't tell her himself due to his pride. His wife mentioned he'd still leave the house in the morning for work, but she felt like something was off about him, and she wondered where he'd go each day. I told her I didn't know either. I knew after that phone call that he was okay and was actively looking for employment elsewhere because we continued to get calls from other clinics asking to speak with our manager as a job reference. I probably have other stories to tell about this place, but we'll have to tell them another time. Good luck with the new show. I think it's a topic that many people can relate to and will help each of us know that we're not alone in this crazy rat race known as the workforce. That is one hell of a story where you don't tell your wife that you were fired.
That's so Dirty John. Did you watch that show or listen to that podcast?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's like this guy who was working in the medical field. Like, I think he was an anesthesiologist. Mm-hmm. And that's what he said. But he would go to work every day, and she thought he had a job, but he never was. But at least this guy, you know, he was a doctor for real, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So he went, did he actually, like, this anesthesiologist, did he have a job as an anesthesiologist? But no.
No, okay. He didn't.
Okay.
But he had this woman believing that.
Oh, okay. And it was like George Costanza, where he just shows up for work and, like, I'm still working here, and just keeps the job going.
I think he probably just went driving around all day and did drugs, I think.
God. Oh, there you go.
But like, okay, so coincidentally, the way we were just talking about doctors,
yeah,
that goes into that story. But what the hell? Like, okay, the first time my doctor farted like that in the exam room, I might let that first time go. Mm-hmm. But like, really, you know, you don't get to do that.
No.
You don't get a fart in my presence and just leave it with, like, no.
Maybe it's a medical condition and he can't help it and you're judging him.
Well,
Carol,
maybe he should take something for it.
That's
then.
True. You probably should do that up here if that's your profession. And you
yeah,
have to
go to the doctor and find out what's the matter with your gut.
You probably write a script.
Irritable bowel syndrome that's annoying the entire world.
Yeah. Yeah. That. I remember we used to have a sports director who would do that at a radio station on purpose, just for fun. He'd just walk into the studio real quick, fart, and leave. And he found it hilarious. And I guess, you know, in a sick sort of way, it kind of was, because I just laughed when I told that story.
Although, so what was your sports director, like 12?
You know, he kind of had that personality for a long time. But I can't speak ill of him right now. I was never super close with him. But he was a good guy to a lot of people. He actually just passed away a couple of weeks ago. He was young, I believe, early 60s or late 50s. I forgot, but it was like, holy shit. Cause he was a sports director. He had been a football player. He was like the last person of all the people that you think of, all the people you know in radio, and all the out of shape, unhealthy people that you've ever met in the world of radio. And this was like one of the most healthy, not radio type looking guys. You know, he was in shape, you know, exercised, ate well. I mean, as far as I remember, I haven't seen him in years, but the last person you'd expect to hear, you know, oh my God, he passed
fart
away.
Whenever he wanted to.
Yeah.
That's a talent.
He's doing farts in the sky now. So Big Sky farting in the sky. His nickname was Big Sky, but he was a good guy. But
so now whenever you smell one and you don't know where it came from,
it's a ghost.
Just point to the sky.
It's ghost.
Kind of did that.
my former ghostly sports director. Yeah. Fun times.
You farting in the afterlife.
Yep. It was horrible because him and our news director were really, really tight. And between the smells of him farting and our news director, he did chew back in the day. So we always had one of those, a coffee cup that he would spit into. So the newsroom just smelled like farts and chew.
Oh, my God.
It was fucking horrible. But yeah, good times. I have very fond memories. They were both really good guys. He's one of my favorite news directors. And we're still friends to this day, but yeah, holy shit. I have a story, office horror story regarding chew and a coffee cup. You can probably guess where that goes.
Oh God, you picked it up.
This is back in the day when you had, before we had internet in the studio, go figure this actually existed circa 1999, 1998, or even into the early 2000s for many of us. If you wanted to get a news story of something that broke, you'd run into the newsroom quick and get it off of the Associated Press computer, the AP. And it's an old black and white computer, runs DOS. The screen goes black. You know there's a breaking story. You go, oh, shit, let's go take a look at that. There's no notifications coming to your watch. So I remember running in there to check out the breaking news story. This was actually, I remember the specific because it's a tragedy in two ways. One for the world and one for me. I had a cup of coffee with me in the studio Saturday night. Screen goes black. Like, oh, what the hell's going on? There's no weather. What's going on? And I go and check on it. It was the night Princess Diana got into a car accident and died. And I'm like, holy shit. And I set my coffee down. And it's just one line of copy. I think I still have that. That line of copy that I printed, it was just Princess Diana or Princess of Wales has died in a car accident. Something very brief, just like straight to the fucking point headline. That's it. And then you wait for the rest of the details as they come out. That's all we knew at that moment. And I'm like, holy shit, set my coffee down. And I'm just scanning to see if anything else has come out. And I pick up a cup. I try to take a sip. It's Greg's chew from early.
Oh, my God.
Like, and I did it. Spit take right into the screen.
Gross.
I know. Yeah. So that's my
that Princess Diana had died. That was so horrible.
It's my where were you when moment when I was drinking spat up chew in the newsroom as I was reading that that story. So then I had to jump on the air and then share that story. So yeah. Good times.
Which one? Breaking news. I just drank out of my boss's spit cup.
Trying not to gag while reading that copy point and having no details other than that to go with, other than she's dead.
And all the phones light up And they're like, what?
Now back to Delilah. It's like, okay, good times. 833-HATE-JOB is our number. 833-HATE job to share your office horror stories with us, or you can share it on our website at officehorrorstories.com. Next one says, I cooked for a few for many years. Chefs are notorious for being assholes. My first boss chef would burn the employees if we fucked up. Literally, we'd take a spatula off the grill, dip it in hot fryer grease, and then place the spatula on your arm. I was 16 in high school and didn't want to fuck up or be fired, so I put up with it. I remember one time this other kid didn't believe how hot a roux, flour, and oil heated up for gumbo, which is probably one of the hottest things in the kitchen was. So the chef guy took a toothpick, dipped it in the roux, then rubbed it on the guy's skin. The guy's skin was boiling, and I could tell he wanted to cry. I remember another time we were crowding up the line and got ahead of him on plating a lot of food. He took all the plates with food on them and just threw them on the ground, food and all. Another thing he did was he made me and my friend compete for our jobs by having a board with tally marks on it. Every time we fucked up, he put a tally on the board, and after 30 days, whoever had the most tallies was fired. The chef would eventually walk out of his business and wife and hightail it to Florida, taking $240,000 with him. His wife, who was part owner, would always say, "Now you can't, you know, you can't burn the employees." Another chef I had when I worked at a casino, I was there for a week before walking out. My first day on the job, he put me to train a guy who had been there for 5 years, who was deaf. I was supposed to watch this guy. First hour on the job, the deaf guy disappears. I had no clue where he went. Turns out he took an hour-long smoke break. This continued every night. He'd be there for 10 minutes, then disappearing, and the chef would get pissed at me when I fucked up. I just operated the grill the whole time. Didn't learn shit about the menu or their operations. I just kept throwing steaks and fish on to order because that was all I knew to do. 2 days after starting, the chef wondered why I was so lost. I told him because the deaf guy's never here or I can't communicate with him. Chef then looks at his feet and says, "Yeah, that he was probably a bad choice to show you the ropes." The chef got mad at one point and just threw the whole pot of mashed potatoes to the ground, had every cook stop what they were doing to learn how to make proper mashed potatoes. This was in the middle of a 4th of July weekend, the busiest day of the weekend of the year. We got so behind, he never addressed me by name or cared to learn it. I finally took him aside one day when I had enough and said, said his name, and I've been doing this since I was 14. I've had managed many kitchens. I went on to explain myself, where I see problems in his kitchen, the overall communication breakdown he has. I delved into his problems with his line and how his workers don't respect him. The conversation went great. He agreed with everything I said, and then he said he hated his job with a passion. Then he turned a complete 180, like he was bipolar, looked at me and he said, "Look, I don't care who you are or what your experience level is. When you're in my kitchen, you're my grill bitch." Not only could he not get my name right, but he didn't give a shit about me. The conversation ended. I finished my shift and never returned. Chefs are fucking crazy. I decided I was getting too old to be in kitchens anymore and wasn't going to be anybody's grill bitch. There you go. The grill bitch story.
Well, that first story when the chef was burning him, I'm like, that's ridiculous that any place would employ a chef like that. But yeah, it was his restaurant.
Yeah. What do you do then when you have the boss who is like, that's it? It's the end all be all. Then you're kind of fucked, you know?
And that kind of pisses me off because they're just kids.
Yeah.
And they're like, they don't know what it's supposed to be like in a real workplace. Mm-hmm. But I get that whole, because I waited tables for years, and there was several people, like, if I had to take food back because it wasn't right, that whole walk back to the kitchen with the food would be like, oh my God, he's going to start screaming at me. And it's like, okay, this steak was supposed to be rare. And as you can see, it's well done.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it took for it to get out, yeah, it took forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would just scream. I'm like, you can see as well as I can. That's not made right. Just make it right. You effed up that one. You know, but, oh, God, it would just be this horrible long walk back to the kitchen the whole time. Like, how, you know, what's he going to say? What's he going to say?
Mm-hmm. A lot of ego there in kitchens.
It's my money on the line because it's like, I'm only making $2 an hour, and mm-hmm. you screw up my tip, I might not get anything off this table.
Have you seen it? What's your opinion on this? You'll know what my opinion is, by the way I'm phrasing the question, but over the last 10, 15 years, has there been a shift in restaurants where when something is seriously wrong with what you get? And I know you experience it a lot being vegetarian, where, you know, you end up getting chicken and something.
Yeah.
And you point out to them, there's a problem here, and it's a legitimate problem. It's not like, oh, I just don't like the flavor of this. It's like, this is, I can't eat this. This is either inedible or not remotely what I ordered. And that sort of thing should be corrected. When you point out things like that, a lot more pushback these days than there used to be. I feel that there is of almost like, I don't want to take it back to the kitchen. I'm going to come up with excuses as to why you're wrong. And it's really like inarguable stuff. And just, you get kind of put in a weird position as the consumer of like, what do you mean you're going to argue this? Like, this chicken is raw, things like that. Like, well, it's just, you know, it's it. No, that's how they cook it. That's not fucking safe.
Yeah.
What do you think?
And I haven't had a ton of problems, because usually when I do send something back, it's because it has meat in it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if I took a bite of it because it has meat in it, I really don't want it.
Sure.
And like recently it happened to me, and it like took forever to even get a waiter's attention, and everybody's pretty much done, and I'm sitting there with nothing to eat.
Yeah.
And she's, and then it's like, well, we'll make it for you again. Well, everybody's going to be done.
Yeah.
Like, just bring me some damn more chips and salsa, I guess. But we're like, we'll make that for you again. No, you kind of ruined it for me already.
Yeah.
But this has literally happened to me more than once in a restaurant. I had chicken in a pasta dish, and I'm like, there's chicken in this. So they take it back. So I start eating it a second time, and there's still chicken in it. And I'm like, you literally put your fingers in here and thought you were picking out all of the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That really disgusts me. And she's like, that didn't happen. And I said, okay, so the other scenario is, well, we just put a little bit of chicken in it this time. Like, no. Like, we're going to only put the chicken on the bottom so she won't see it right away. No, you picked out the chicken. Just admit it. And I ain't paying for that shit either.
Coming up on Dateline, hidden chicken. There's a chicken hiding at the bottom. Carol Hughes investigates. Yeah, it's there's so much of that shit where it's like, let's, I don't know, where you have that is another point that you just made there that I also see a lot of these days, where it's you go to them to communicate what the problem is. Here's what needs to be done to correct it. And you're not looking for a refund. You're not looking for anything free. You just want the job done right. That's all you're going for. And it like second round, they do the exact same thing wrong. Exactly. Yeah. The point of what you brought up is fucked up. I had that I'm still going through that right now with the cable company. And it's
did they put chicken in your cable?
They put chicken in the fucking cable line. I'm like, I didn't want chicken. This was supposed to be made 100% out of beef. That's what we agreed on.
It was a vegan cable.
No, that's down the road. I wanted the beef one. It's a little heartier, and I'm okay with eating it. So, but no, so they put we have internet here. We don't have cable television. We just have internet, and I run our television through the internet. We do streaming everything. That's all we do. Completely cord cutted. So they have the line to our house, and it's now this giant coax hanging out of the side of our house and then running through my backyard out to the box where it goes to. Now, they got it installed quickly. I was happy with it. But there's a giant line that needs to be buried. And the guy who installed it said, okay, I'm going to put a ticket in so they come out and bury the line. Okay, great. I know that usually takes a handful of days. That's cool. I know, whatever. Big deal. So 3 weeks in, it's still not buried. And the guy who's in back the other day working on getting our lawn to have grass in the back because it's mainly mud, he's out there reseeding it. And he almost hits the line, and he gets his machine stuck, and it's this fucking line that's still out there. Luckily, he didn't damage the line, but it fucked up his vehicle. So I'm like, okay, I got to call the cable company. So I call them. Hey, can you guys come out and bury this line? I think somebody dropped the ball or it fell through the cracks. You know, we just need to get this done because it's becoming a hazard. Okay, yeah, we'll send someone out there. So 4 days later, somebody comes out. So the gentleman shows up, well-intentioned, I'm sure, but he has no idea why he's there. They did not communicate to him what the job was. And there's a massive language barrier here. And I felt bad for the guy because it was like there was no communicating. He didn't understand what I was saying. I didn't understand what he was saying. And we were, I think, both a little frustrated. But that was the reality of the situation. So it was very difficult to communicate what needed to be done. Like, okay, you need to bury the line. And he gets out a large wire cutter. And he's Yeah, and I'm like, no. And I'm saying no, and he's not stopping. And I had to run over there and like wave my arms like, no. And he's just like, he's like motioning. He's like going to cut the line. I'm like, no. And it was very difficult. And he insisted on cutting the line. And I eventually had to point at the road and say bye. And to communicate, please leave. And I'm like, you need to go. They didn't communicate with you what you need to do. And he didn't understand anything I was saying. It was probably just as frustrating for him as it was for me.
And you kind of want the line buried before they put in your name.
Yeah. It's like, seed. I just want the line buried. So it was very frustrating and I felt bad for the guy and I think he was, you know, but it's like, if we can't communicate and he doesn't know what he's supposed to do, we're not going to solve our problem here today. So then I went and looked at the ticket that they had submitted for this and it said, come, fix TV, reception issues. It's like, I don't even have TV service through you. And surely cutting the line was not going to fix TV reception issues. So I don't know what this gentleman thought was going to be the solution by cutting my line off. So he left.
Well, he couldn't have read the ticket anyway.
I know. I don't know what his thought was, but that's how that went. So it was very close to like losing internet and everything for quite a while. But thank God I was there to stop that. So then it came to them. Me calling them again saying, okay, we need to get this buried. Okay, well, we're going to send somebody out tomorrow to do it. Okay, great. And I get emailed, you know, your service ticket again. What's the service ticket say? Come and fix your TV reception issues. So I called back again. And I said, no, that's not the problem. I don't even have TV service through you. I need a line buried. So can we communicate that on the ticket so when the tech gets here, he knows what he's here to do? Oh, yeah. Well, I'll get that fixed right away. I get the revised ticket. Fixed TV service issues. Again. Okay. So I try their text service. They have this text customer service because I think they're sick of talking to people who are screaming at them because they're fucking incompetent. And I'm like, okay, I'll try the text thing. Took an hour to communicate. This needs to be fixed. You talk about the customer service voice-to-voice inefficient. Text takes it to a whole new level of frustration and incompetency. So still, nothing correct. So today, and now a week and a half later, after the simple goal of please send someone to come bury this line, someone comes out here, and all he does is he takes a look at it and goes, yeah, we need to have somebody come out here and bury this. Are you fucking serious? Like,
it's like, that's a great idea. When can we have that done? Like now?
What a
novel.
Does
now work?
Well, I gotta communicate that to another department. I'm like, yeah. So, like, holy shit. I used to use this service years ago and it was inefficient. They have it here in this market. I haven't had it for years. And I'm like, holy shit, it's 10 times worse than it used to be when it comes to the customer service. So it's like, wow. So that was my my adventure today, or the last week and a half. 855, what is it? 833-HATE-JOB is our phone number at Office Horror Stories. One more letter for the day. It says, when I first started working for the government, I had a supervisor who was about the same age as me at the time, around 34. 3 years down the road in 2017, she sadly took her own life. No one knew the reason, but most of us always felt that she was still there with us, mostly in our hearts. She was so beautiful and had a very bubbly personality, which made it extremely hard to lose her. A few of us packed up her desk the day after we found out she had passed, but we left some of her belongings, such as plants and a few other little things, so we had a memory of her. We all grieved, but eventually life went on as well and worked together to deal with the devastation of losing her. We had one employee that felt that our deceased supervisor was still lingering around in our building. Yes, the building was old, so most of us knew it had to be water pipes just cracking from the old foundation. I'll admit, when I stayed late, I was creeped out by some of the sounds the building gave off. One day, the strange coworker, we'll call her Linda, and another coworker, we'll call her Betty, arrived to work early while it was still dark, and they creeped themselves out so badly by noises, which they thought was someone's deep voice saying something, that they both grabbed whatever weapon they could, called the police, and waited with their weapons. Who knows what they grabbed when the police arrived. Betty told the police there was someone in the building, and Linda said, "Our supervisor died, and she's still in the building." For about a year, Linda was also thought that she had seen my supervisor walk through the walls. Cops literally had their guns raised up and ready to shoot when they were told this. After Linda told them this, they lowered their guns immediately, walked through the building to find no one was there, and left, probably thinking they were nuts, and they really were some of the nuttiest employees in my office, to tell you the truth. After that, we'd all joke that our office building would be the worst place to be stuck for all eternity, especially the bathroom, which is where Linda supposedly kept on seeing her. So, sad office story, and possibly having a ghost in the office.
I'm with him. Like, if I die, I don't want to haunt work. Like, that would be horrible, because it's like, can I please just, like, be someplace I really love, like the beach or something? Mm-hmm. Because that's just cruel that you'd have to haunt that.
Time for a career change when you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's this weird collective. It's happened to me at work where someone's committed suicide, and it's happened to me at work where a couple of people died in a horrific accident. Mm-hmm. And it's a very odd collective grief that people go through. Mm-hmm. And I had never, you know, because usually it's like, you know, I lost a friend. Mm-hmm. The whole workplace didn't. And then everybody feels bad for you and you get cards. But this is the whole, everyone you know is grieving.
Sure.
And so that's really tough. And so, you know, I could see how people could think that, especially if the building's kind of creaky and weird anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because it's like, well, how else do you explain that sound? It's certainly not the pipes. It's the ghost.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I, you know, everybody kind of deals with it differently. But it is a weird feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, because they're there. Because all their things are there. It's just, yeah. That's a really strange thing to go through at work.
There's one that comes to mind, and it's kind of a funny story, because part of you kind of cringes when you hear this story. And then once you think about the individual, you go, yeah, they probably would have thought that was pretty cool. There was a gentleman who had passed away that we had worked with after he had gotten a very tragic diagnosis, and he had passed away, and they did a memorial for him outside of the building. And it was, you know, kind of like, oh, okay, you know, in memory, this is sweet. It's a little bench that's out back, and he was a smoker, so other smokers, you know, they can kind of go out there and you know, sit on the bench if you want. I don't know. But what I found very interesting about that was, it was less than like, I don't know, probably a couple months after he had passed. And this is where it gets to be kind of inappropriate or appropriate. It just depends how you look on it. One of the stations does a fairly risque, or did a fairly risque, calendar shoot with local strippers, I think. And I remember driving into the workplace that one day, and posing all over the bench are these women in bikinis, and they're taking pictures. And I'm like, this is kind of like a grave site almost with these women.
Although he would have loved that.
That's my point. That's where I'm like, in one way, it's like, it's kind of like a grave site. And at the same point, it's like, he would have really thought that was cool.
Yeah, so, he would have loved it.
It's like inappropriate to some, but if you think of who this is dedicated to, he'd be down with that.
Yeah.
Just kind of a funny one there. I have another story, but maybe we'll save it for another episode. I know it'll be brought up at some point of buildings being stormed and guns being drawn. And there's another fun episode that we can talk about that one on. Do you remember that incident?
Sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it was a blast. But we'll save that for another episode of Office Horror Stories. It's just, I love this show. So many memories just come right out. You're like, oh yeah, I had something kind of like that happen before. It's just crazy, crazy shit. All right, 833-HATE-JOB if you want to share your office horror story with us, or on our website, officehorrorstories.com. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Office Horror Stories.